This sheet that I handed out, I just looked up in the Bible all the times when the word, the Greek word, allelon, occurred. And this isn't a list of all of them, but it's most of them. The word allelon means one another. And so these are the one another's of the Bible. And there's so many times when we're commanded to behave in a certain way towards one another. They're all talking about towards other Christians. Love one another. Jesus' basic command is love one another. That's referred to as the command of Christ over and over. And it's the fulfillment of the whole law, love God and love one another. Carry one another's burdens, be devoted to one another, honor one another, accept one another, and so on. If you just pick out one of those, one of them is be devoted to one another from Romans 12. Just think about the other people in this room and think about the other people in the church. According to Scripture, those are the people that you're to be devoted to. It's not really an option for us in the church to just come to church, just attend and enjoy whatever events go on, things like that. You have a responsibility when you're part of a church to actually be devoted to the other people, the rest of the church family. If you want to look in your Bible, Romans 12:10, we'll just look at that just briefly this evening. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves. Let's just look at that one verse. It's an interesting verb. There's no verb. There is in the NIV because they put one in there to make it readable. But in the Greek, there's no command, there's no verb. It just says, regarding the brotherly love, devotion. That's basically what it says. Or a better translation than devotion is family affection is a better translation for that word. Regarding the brotherly love, family affection towards one another. Then the next sentence, regarding honor, then the best translation would be to have zeal or to be the first to show honor. There's nine in a row like that, the way it comes out in the Greek in this section of Romans 12, where there's no verb, it's just real interesting format. But the fact that it's in that grammatical format really highlights and emphasizes the point that's being made. The words that are used are the only words that are there, and so they're all emphatic. And so, regarding the brotherly love, family affection, let me define these terms for you, and this will kind of open up. The word family affection, or it's translated in the NIV, devoted, but it's the word family affection. And what it means, it's an interesting word because it's a combination of two words. Philos or phileo, you've heard of phileo love, and storge, which is another Greek word for love that you may not have heard. It doesn't get as much press as phileo and agape and eros, but storge is the Greek word for natural family love, like the love that a mother feels towards her baby, or you feel towards your parents or siblings or whatever. That kind of family love. That's the word storge. And this is an interesting word. It combines philos with family love. So that's why I say family affection. The brotherly love, that's the word Philadelphia, literally to love of brothers. So that's also a family kind of a term. The fact that he says the brotherly love, regarding the brotherly love, what he's referring to there is just the natural love that all Christians have for one another. You know, you go somewhere, you meet someone, you've never met them before, but you find out they're a Christian, immediately there's a bond between you and a camaraderie and a love. That's that love that he's talking about. Just the natural love that's always present between Christians, automatically. And he's saying, concerning that, regarding that normal brotherly love that's present with Christians, family affection. That is, that love is to be characterized by a very intimate, soft, close, family-type affection. Aside from, you know, whatever goes on in the back seat of the car on a long trip, aside from that, when it really comes down to it, when there's a sense that somebody might be really hurt or they're crying out in pain, something like that, there really is a love, a family affection between siblings, between family members that emerges. And it's a real genuine kind of a care. I remember when Josiah was just an infant. He was, I think, just a couple weeks old. And Carol Nicole was pretty little, but she's just big enough to be able to hold him and stand up. And that's what she was doing. She was carrying him down the hallway. And she lost her balance and fell. All of a sudden we hear this boom. And we turn around and they're on the ground. And the immediate, very first thing she said is, "It's okay, it was my head." And what happened was when she was falling, he was about to crash into the wall and she curled around and took the whole blow on her head to try and protect him. She didn't give that any thought. It was just something that happened spur of the moment, just her natural reaction. But that's just the kind of family affection that's just natural. And a great illustration of really what we, the attitude that we should have towards one another. It's okay, it's my head, you know. So, Paul's saying, with our normal brotherly love that we have towards one another in church, it should be like that. It should be like that family affection. A family that's at its best. Now the question is, how do you get to that point? There's a couple of things that come to mind. First, spend time thinking about a person's strengths. And by the way, this whole weekend we're going to be talking about relationships within the church and how to have strong relationships in the church. But these things can also apply to any relationships, marriage relationships and family relationships with children or parents or anything else, because they're wisdom from God's Word. But one of the things to do is to focus on people's strengths. Focus on what's good about people. You know, God made everybody, and He made everybody good. There's something good about everybody. And the characteristics a person was born with, if you think about it, those things were designed by God, which is a fascinating thing to just think that through. You know, we don't have any trouble looking at these mountains and thinking, oh, those are designed by God. But when we bump into somebody that has a certain kind of a personality that's different than what we're used to, aside from the sinful aspects that it's been tainted with, the degree to which they were born with those characteristics, that's a creation of God. And so the more we spend time focusing on a person's strengths and the things that are good about a person, the more affection we'll tend to have towards that person. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's a lot of work. It's even work doing that for your spouse. Mary and I were talking the about writing a card to your spouse. If you sit down, get a greeting card, and try and write a card to your spouse, and write all the things that make them a great person. Not just what they do for you, but something that's just true about them in general, that attributes of them that are good. That takes some thought, takes some work. It takes work for anybody. So if you to go through that work, pick out people in the church and to figure out things that are good about their personality. And the more you do that, the more people you do that with, and the more you develop that skill and that habit, the more you get to the point where you will actually automatically do that. In fact, you'll get to the point where you don't even have to do it. You'll just meet somebody and you'll just assume there's something great about them. That's one thing I really noticed. And for me, you know, I came from a background where when I was growing up, I did not like people at all. I hated being around people. When I was in high school, I didn't have any friends. I never talked to anybody. Literally, came to school and I never opened my mouth the whole time I was there until I went home. I just did not like people. And I realized that that was a little bit in conflict with wanting to be a pastor. And so I thought, well, you know, I got to learn to love people. And so I started doing this. I started thinking about, I'd see somebody and I'd just spend a month or two just trying to find out what was good about that person. And when I did that, I found out, wow, that's an interesting person. That's a neat person there. You know, there's a lot of good about them. And I kept doing that, and as I consciously kept doing that, I'd meet someone and say, you know, I know there's going to be something good about this person. And you get into the habit of just assuming that, and that's one characteristic of spiritual maturity, is when you can assume the best of people. That's one of the marks of love. And it's one thing a lot of people really struggle with, so it's not an easy thing for a lot of people. And so if you can get to the point where you can assume the best of people, you know, when you see that in the Bible, it says love always trusts in 1 Corinthians 13. Sometimes you read love always trusts and you think, well, you know, it's almost dishonest. If I'm going to assume the best of this guy, and he's a crumb, you know. And that's not what the Bible's saying. It doesn't want us to assume the best about people contrary to what we know is true about them. But if you can train yourself to focus on the good characteristics of people, then that's what it's talking about. And you'll start to assume the best in that way. What you don't know, you'll assume is good. If you know something's bad, then you know it's bad. You can't deny that. But what you don't know, you'll assume is good. And that's important. That's not only important part for your own spiritual walk, but it's important for the health and the life of the church that everybody does that. Because there's so many times when you just don't know what a person's motives are. Something happens, somebody says something to you, looks at you a certain way, you know, certain things happen, and you don't know what's going on. And if you're the type of person that will assume the worst, and there's other people in the church that are like that too, you're going to have a church that's got fighting and chaos. The only way to have a healthy church is to have people assuming the best. So, that's one thing. The second thing is learn about the person's struggles in life. You pick a person and find out what's difficult for them in life. And then you'll have to get to know them a little bit before they'll be to open up to you and talk to you about things like that. But the more you learn about somebody else's suffering, the more tender affection you tend to have towards them. The person that you like the least in the church, if you saw that person laying on the ground, broken arm and bleeding, your heart would go out to them. And there's something about suffering that does that. It draws us to one another. And everybody's suffering to some degree. And so if you can find out what the struggles people are dealing with are, you'll find yourself having more of a close affection. You know, another one of the things on this list, bear one another's burdens. Think about that command for a minute. Bear one another's burdens. How can you bear one another's burdens if you don't know what they are? Do you know what anybody's burdens are in the church? Do you know what any struggles anybody's going through? Sometimes we don't even know the struggles that are going on with our own family members. And so that's something that takes some work, takes some effort to try and get to know a person well enough to know that. But it's commanded. So there's an affection that we're supposed to have towards one another. The point that Paul's making here is the love that we're supposed to have towards one another is not just simply the normal Christian love. It goes beyond just taking care of people and being kind and friendly to people. He's saying it should involve a real family affection. In fact, another thing on this list, there's about four times when it says greet one another with a holy kiss. Romans 16, 1 Corinthians 16, 2 Corinthians 13, 1 Peter 5. Greet one another with a kiss of love. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Now, I don't know how you interpret that verse. Planted a holy one or two on Tracy, but other than that, you know, I mean, how are we supposed to respond to this? Obviously, that was the culture of ancient Israel. In our culture, it might just be shaking someone's hand or giving someone a hug or whatever. But that's part of what this is talking about, physical affection and friendliness. And then just quickly, the last part of the verse, he says, honor one another above yourselves. Or literally, regarding honor, the word literally means outdoing one another. Regarding honor, outdoing one another. The idea is it's a big race to see if you can honor the other guy, before he has a chance to honor you. You should walk around the church, you should walk around your house, looking for, you know, thinking to yourself, I'm going to honor you before you have a chance to honor me. I'm going to outdo you when it comes to, and if you do honor me, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to honor you in a bigger way. You're not going to be able to keep up with my honoring you. That's the kind of attitude that we should have towards one another. Oh man, can you imagine a whole church full of people with that kind of attitude? Trying to outdo each other with honor, respect. You know, part of the problem the world has, and it's amazing, whenever I counsel people, especially do marriage counseling and so on, almost every marital struggle is something like this. You've got this person over here, and this person over here, and what they're trying to do is meet each other halfway. I'll come to here, you come to here, we both give in halfway, and that's how, you know, that's fair. And it never seems to work. Now, you would think it would work because, you know, you just go halfway and they go halfway, and if you're both willing to do that, you'd think everything would work out fine. The reason it doesn't work is if you're looking from this perspective on this line and you're this guy, it seems to you like you're going not only halfway, but you're going all the way up to here. But from this person's perspective, you're only coming from here to about here. And this person thinks they're going all the way to here. And so the problem is, you don't meet. This guy stops here, and this person stops here. This is from that perspective. This is from this perspective. But either way, you don't meet in the middle. You don't meet anywhere. And when you have this idea that I'm going to go halfway, there are times when you just need to go all the way. I mean, this kind of attitude, I'm going to out-honor you, says, if you come to here, I'm going to come to here. If you come to here, I'm going to go clear to here. You come to here, I'm going to go clear off to here. This kind of an idea where I'm going to do more than you. When you have the attitude of, I'll do only as much as you're doing, or less, which is the attitude most people have, there will never be harmony in a relationship. And so in the church, and in our families, and any Christian you deal with, we need to have the attitude of outdoing one another in honor. It would be interesting to see what's going to happen in our first church fight. I don't know when that's going to happen or if it'll ever happen. It seems like it happens in every church eventually. And I'm hoping that it won't happen while I'm still alive, you know, but if it does, then this is, hopefully I'll remember to pull this verse out, and somebody can come to me with a complaint, someone else, and I'll say, oh, outstanding, perfect. This gives you an excellent opportunity to outdo them in honor. It'll be easy for you to outdo them in honor because they're not honoring you very much. So you should be thrilled. That kind of an attitude, I don't see how you could have a church fight with that kind of attitude. Now, what do you do when you have differences that are of the nature where one person is saying the best way to honor God is this, and another person is saying, no, the best way to honor God is this. And, of course, you're both very passionate. It's not that you're being selfish. You're both very passionate because you both want to honor God, but you have a different understanding of how to do that. We'll talk about that later on in the weekend.